Welcome to 4.0 to Pro, the pickleball podcast that focuses on a single shot, tip, or strategy to improve your pickleball game with every single pocket-sized episode. Our goal is to make you better on the court every time you hear our voices. And now your hosts, 4.something Michael O'Neill and USA Pickleball National Silver Medalist, Senior Pro Scott Fliegelman.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of 4.0 to Pro, your pocket-sized pickleball podcast, where we teach you a single shot or strategy every single episode. I'm Michael O'Neill here in sunny Long Beach, California, joined by my good pal, Mr. Scott Fliegelman, there in Boulder, Colorado. Scott, how are you enjoying the warmest fall in Colorado history?
Well, it's 62 and perfect inside at Boulder Pickleball like it is every day. I wouldn't mind, I have to be honest with you, if it would be 12 and snowing outside.
Right.
I'm really just curious. I just want to see how we handle, you know, the chaos of the winter season. But we're busy. It's all good.
It's a good answer. Yeah. So yeah. I have to tell you, I am somewhat shocked about today's show topic. You texted me the other day and you were like, hey, have we done a show on mixed doubles? And I'm like, of course we have. That had to be one of the first 10 episodes. Meanwhile, we're at episode 41 and we've never done a show on mixed doubles, which is bizarre to me. So today we're doing mixed doubles.
I'd like to think we've offered the mixed doubles teams out there plenty of strategic guidance, but we just haven't put it under the specific heading of mixed doubles yet. So let's take it on.
Well, this is really good, I think, especially for me. You've obviously played mixed doubles for years and years and years. I'm somewhat new to tournament mixed doubles. And what I didn't realize until I got into a tournament with mixed doubles is how different it is than rec mixed doubles. It is a very different animal in terms of the responsibilities of each player and the expectations of each player. And crazily enough, the fitness level of the player that's not being targeted. And what I mean by that is, and I think we'll probably dig into this a little deeper, but when you're playing and your opponents are targeting your partner, which very often happens in mixed doubles, they might target the person on the right-hand side. Even, by the way, in gender doubles, they do that. It's a, you know, the left-hand player has that dominant forehand in the middle, and they might be trying to avoid it. Well, what I found is that we'd be having these 60-second rallies, and there I am split-stepping and staying light on my feet, having never hit a ball the entire rally, and I'm pinned at 160 beats per minute going, God, I feel like I just did an aerobic workout. And that is just not something that I expected at all that day when I walked into my first mixed doubles tournament.
Yeah, and you bring up another really good point, Michael, that at rec play, open play, I don't necessarily think we should be thinking mixed doubles. I would suggest more so co-ed doubles
right.
At open play. There's just not a whole lot of time to fully discuss the strategies, the roles, regardless of gender. And to your point, mixed doubles in a tournament setting with a partner who you've signed up with, you've had a chance to practice some of what we're going to discuss today, and there's just agreed upon roles. There's just not enough time to do that at open play. So think of that more as co-ed doubles.
Yeah. It's almost the third completely different animal of pickleball. Singles being one, doubles being another, and mixed doubles being a third, because I don't play any of those the exact same way. For today's particular show, why don't we give the disclaimer in terms of how we're going to set up the strategies that we're about to talk about?
Yeah, I think one of the reasons why mixed doubles requires some specific attention is more so than gender doubles. There is frequently physical differences between the two players. So for the sake of this show, we've got a mythical mixed doubles team. We've got Brian, age 42, 6'1", both players right-handed. And Brian he's got height, reach, power, finishing skills, overheads, foot speed, and a big serve. And his partner is Sally, a similar age. She's 5'5", well, Brian is 6'1". Sally's strengths are thirds, dinks, return of serve, lobs, focus, resets, and fitness. So this is just a sample set of, let's call it, an average mixed doubles team, where the big differences are going to be in physical stature, power, strength, some of those elements there. These things do exist in gender doubles from time to time, and we might want to borrow some of those. If you have a frequent gender doubles partner who's much larger or smaller than you, then some of these tactics will apply. But in general, we see these things, these differences, most often in mixed doubles.
Right. And there are absolutely exceptions to all of this. Somebody might have the most wicked backhand flick or some crazy shot that they're really, really good at, or they're great at deception. Maybe you're playing with Anna Bright. She has a fierce two-handed backhand in the middle that might make you adjust your strategy a bit.
Now, for sure.
I'm not sure if you've seen my tournament signups. Anna has not returned my text messages, so she is not going to be my mixed doubles partner. Sadly.
Well, one of us has played mixed doubles with her, so we'll focus on that guy a little bit.
Yeah. Perfect. So in general, when we are playing mixed, we're probably stacking, right? That is generally how it plays. It's as if you're playing with a left-handed player. So whoever's playing the left-hand side stays on the left-hand side. Whoever's playing on the right-hand side stays on the right-hand side. From a strategy standpoint, why do we do that?
Well, as we shared during our stacking-focused show, players from 4-0 to pro need to be very fluent in stacking. No one listening to this show should be foreign to the concept, so that we are ready to stack based on a number of different reasons with zero anxiety. So the options are the traditional stack, which would generally put the bigger, stronger, more powerful, taller, longer player on the left side, assuming we're both right-handed, and they are likely to play 60% or more of the balls, given their dominance in the middle. I've shared on this show that there's an increasing amount of evidence that shows that heads-up stacking for specific matchups may be of equal value. I've had a chance to play with some of the best women players in the world, senior pro and open pro, and frequently they'll say to me, I really feel good in front of her and occasionally him, and I would like us to stack so that I'm in front of the player over whom I feel I have an advantage. So we need to be able to stack that way as well. There's something called reverse stacking, which is a little bit sexist, which in mixed doubles would mean the woman plays on the left and the man plays on the right. But there could be lots of reasons for that, including the aforementioned heads-up matchups. So it might look like a reverse stack. When I played with Anna Bright, the announcers credited us for quote-unquote reverse stacking, but Anna had specific skills and we are similar in height. So she played more on the left. I played more of a traditional role for the female player on the right, and we did great. But sometimes that's called reverse stacking. And then for all of those, let's just a reminder that there are times to half stack, three-quarter stack, and full stack. And as a reminder, half stack is we do it just on serve. It's easiest to stack when serving. One player just stands to the side, serve, and step over. Three-quarter stack is one of us feels comfortable enough returning serve and booking it to the other cross-court kitchen line. Full stacking is when both of us feel comfortable on return of serve, hitting a deep down the line return and booking it to the other side. Another option is we play full on straight up and we just follow the rules and we play left side, right side, left side, right side.
Which we don't see a whole lot in mixed doubles. You see that in gender doubles sometimes when they want to kind of mix it up. I think it's worth noting there are certain expectations when someone has played a lot of mixed doubles. And this is where I was a real rookie. When I played a tournament, whatever it was, a couple months ago, my first 4-5 plus mixed doubles tournament, my partner had expectations of me that I was fairly unprepared for. I didn't expect to be as middle present and right side dominant as they wanted me to be, as they were used to, as they knew the formula was.
What do you mean by right side dominant?
Meaning like I was way over on their side. I was way over from the left side to the right side, stepping into their spot, which I wouldn't do in rec doubles as much.
Right.
Yeah, in co-ed doubles. I wouldn't do that as much. My partner had a very clear expectation and said, yeah, that was your ball. And I was expecting her to, you know, why? I don't know. I was expecting her to take some high backhand instead of me just putting it away with my forehand. And I'm like, why would I do that? And so it took a little bit of time for me just to get used to, oh, there are roles and expectations here. And kind of why? Because what we see very often in mixed in tournaments is that our opposing team will target a person or they will target a certain shot. And if that person or shot happens to be your partner on the right-hand side, as that left-side player, you're trying to do whatever you can to sort of involve yourself in the point. And sometimes that means poaching further over than you typically would, just to keep them honest, if you will, right? Isn't that something that you, I suppose you're very used to it now, but can you think about the transition time when you had to think, wow, this is a different animal than what I'm used to?
Well, for potentially repeating ourselves just a little bit, is you were being courteous to, to your partner, and you had not yet fully agreed on the roles and your strategy for your mixed doubles, which is different than co-ed. Let's talk more about how far over the left side player might come, assuming we're all right-handed. It is a relatively small court, and there are reasons to come across the center line. Even if you and I are playing, if I'm on the right side and you get a chance to put away a high forehand, our team would prefer that you put away a high forehand versus my pretty good, but not as good as your, my pretty good high backhand isn't as good as your high forehand. So I'm going to want you to take that ball. And in mixed doubles, we may have an agreement that that left side player is going to be coming over and looking to put that ball away and causing some stress for our opponents accordingly.
Let's get into gameplay a little bit. So we've served. The other team has returned. Who takes the third? There's a bunch of different strategies around this that I think are really interesting, that are these pro-level strategies that I'd love for you to dig into a little bit.
You know, let's answer two questions that are kind of together. Who takes the third, and should we drop or drive? And I'll put those together in my answers. You know, the most common answer, and we see it all the time, is the male player who's on the left tends to come over and take an awful lot of thirds. And that can be fine, especially if that male player has a particularly powerful drive. So that is an option. I'm going to offer my thoughts from my experience, and I discuss these with my mixed partner, hopefully before we play, but frequently it's after a couple of rallies happen. My preference is for my female partner to take the thirds. In my assessment of a lot of mixed doubles teams, the female partner has just as good a third shot drop as the male, if not better, a lot of the time. And one of my most recent partners, Eva Welcher, has a particularly great drop. And the last match that we played together against Stefan Andrin and Hall of Famer Jennifer Dawson, Eva was hitting just some beautiful drops. And it gives me license. It gives me a chance to do what I do well, which is to disrupt and smother and cause concern for the player who's about to hit their fourth, and they don't want to deal with me being who knows where in the court. So in my particular case, I prefer that my female partner take the thirds as much as possible.
When I backhand, sorry to interrupt. Even if that it happens to be a backhand, they have a slice backhand third. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, but even if we're stacking, I may hang pretty far to the left to give her a chance to take a forehand if she would prefer to do that.
So she could pop over to the left a little bit more to give herself a forehand if she wants it.
She's often like, that ball may bounce twice between us because she's expecting me to come over and take that ball. And then we have our conversation. And most of the time she's like, great, I'm happy to hit that third shot drop and let you do your thing.
Yes. And at that point, you're on the prowl. You're watching that third like a hawk.
Yes.
If it's a great drop, you're attacking the drop. If it's up a little bit, you're still going to be in a position to counter whatever the fourth is.
Yes.
Or you're in full defensive mode because you've recognized that it's a little bit high.
Right. So I like the option of my female partner taking the third and dropping. Another option is the male player who, let's say, reminder of our scenario here, Brian, who is 6'1 and has a lot of power. Let's have the male player take the third and drive the ball at the player on the other side who handles it worse. And a lot of the time, that's the female player on the other side who's not used to seeing that kind of pace as much. So when I take the third, I will frequently drive at the female player on the other side, and we're looking for some sort of mistake, weak fourth ball that comes back. We might shake and bake it, or at least we get to drop our fifth and get into the kitchen line from there. So who takes the third? Either one of us can take the third. Frequently, when my female partner takes it, we drop. When I take the third, we drive at the female player.
This is going to be a sort of a weird question, but where does your chivalry gene kick in on that hard drive? Because I've seen this. I've seen the woman get ripped by these super velocity forehands, and some have no problem with them at all, and then some get kind of blown up by it. At the level that you generally play, are you just completely unconcerned about that?
I think we addressed that at the top of the show. We're not talking about co-ed doubles.
Right.
We're talking about competitive mixed doubles, tournament level, and in my case, pro level mixed doubles.
There's money involved.
Yeah, and I play against female players who can take my drive and put it right back at me.
Right.
You know, it's not always a successful play.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, they're on the court expecting to play high level mixed doubles. And that includes the male player driving and attacking in their direction, because frequently that's going to be the best way to win, to target the player on the other side who has a lesser chance of dealing with the pace.
Yeah, I'm sure if you interviewed all of the top senior women and open women, they would be like, yeah, this is just what we do. That's what we're training for.
And they love it. A lot of them love the challenge.
Yeah.
And they meet the challenge quite well.
So the next option we have to decide is, who are we going to return to on the court? Is one of the two players better at thirds? Does one player only have like a third shot drive versus a third shot drop? Who's fifth is better? There's a lot of strategy involved. Does that reveal itself in gameplay, Scott? Or is that something that you predetermined before you've stepped on the court with them?
We better have predetermined it before we step on the court. I've mentioned it on the show before. It's one of those things that in tournament play, you should be asking yourselves as a team, which player are we returning to and why? And I'm okay with either option. If one of them is clearly weaker at thirds, then there's a compelling reason to return to that player. That could be male or female. Email, doesn't matter. But frequently, as we've discussed, I've identified that the female player has just as good a third shot drop, if not better, than the male player. But also in our case, you know, our mythical team here, the male player is much bigger, stronger, and faster. And that concerns me more so on the fifth. And my partner and I are going to ask the question, which one of them are we more concerned with on the fifth? And that may be the player we want to return to and take our chances with their third shot drive or drop and keep them out of the midcourt on the fifth. Guess what? That's what a lot of my opponents have figured out, that, you know, Fliegelman's a pain in the neck on the fifth. Let's return to him, take our chances with his drive or drop, and we're less concerned with his partner's fifth ability to put the ball away. And good for those guys, you know, for doing that. So we want to make sure we address and answer that question, which player are we returning to and why, before the match starts.
That makes tons of sense too, because if you're attacking those fourths, if you're using your speed and your intuition to be in the right place at the right time, and that fourth is, you know, coming into your breadbasket, it makes tons of sense for them to try to figure out how to steer that away from you. One thing that happened over the weekend with this lefty player I was playing with, and I'm just using that as an example of, since we were stacking, a lot of mixed movement, is we played against a team that loved to lob. And we had to stop, and I said, look, this isn't going to end. These guys clearly have a lob in their strategy. Every few shots, they want to just lob and get us back. We struggled with, I think, two of them where we were a little bit discombobulated. And I just said, hey, let's let the diagonal player track it down just because it's easier to see it. And let's just jump into that switch spot. So if it were in the air, we would call each other off and take it. But if it was a great lob and we had to run back and the thing had to bounce, what tended to work a little better for us was to have the person on the opposite side run in a diagonal, and then that person that just got the lob over their head to fill in that space. And we both had enough wheels that we could get to the ball and get a nice drop on it. But the advantage of it for us anyway was that we're coming at the ball from the side instead of directly behind it, which happens a lot when you get lobbed right over your head. Your partner can take up that shot and have a relatively clean forehand or backhand versus trying to do a tweener or something kind of over your head. So I think because lobbing has become such a strategy in doubles, especially in mixed, there just got to be a few different options you guys talk about, right? Like as the game starts and how you strategically deploy the response to that lob.
Well, the scenario you described and the strategy for handling it, I think is appropriate when the ball bounces, when the ball gets over somebody's head. I'm on record on this show and on all of my, you know, my lessons, come hell or high water, let's get this ball out of the air. We've got rudimentary equipment in our hands that doesn't work very well on a bounced ball, but it's not bad over our head. When they give us a chance to hit down on a ball, let's take it. So here's how I'm going to answer that question, assuming we're getting the ball out of the air. If it's gender doubles, I like to give responsibility to the player over whose head the ball is lobbed to make the determination for the team. And as early as possible, call mine or yours. But I don't want my partner telling me whether I can get that thing out of the air or not. I get to make that decision in gender doubles. In mixed doubles, I like to potentially give the team the option to the big bigger, taller, stronger player on the left, right-handed player, covering but only 20 feet of court, the opportunity to get that ball out of the air for the team, given that that ball is to their right no matter what, and they can get a lot of balls out of the air, including a deeper ball with their height and their reach. And that's what I tend to do in mixed doubles, is have a conversation with my partner. If I'm playing the left-hand side, and I'm only 5'8", but I'm pretty quick and I have good anticipation, my female partner may give me an opportunity to call mine and get that ball out of the air. Of course, if I do that, I love it if she goes right to the middle of the court, the tee by the kitchen, to play any cleanup duty. If that ball happens to come back, it's going to come back weak, and I want her to put that ball away. If she happens to take it out of the air, I'm going to do the same thing. You know, go right to the middle and put that ball away. So those are two options. One I tend to think is better for gender doubles, and one's a little better for mixed.
And you alluded to this right at the beginning of that, which is you'd rather call yourself and say, I'm basically taking this ball. There might also be an occasion, for whatever reason, you're cross-footed, you can't get to it. You might say something like, help, right? Where you call your teammate to say, look, there's no way I'm going to be able to get this thing out of the air. We're probably going to have to settle for the bounce, and you've got a better angle on the bounce.
Yeah, and again, that goes to the option A that I think is a little bit better in gender doubles, is if the ball's lobbed over your head as soon as possible, call mine or yours helper switch.
Yours help or switch.
Or whatever, yeah. Whatever works for, you know, for your team, but as early as possible. And if you say mine, then deal with it. And if you say yours, help or switch, abdicate the court, get out of there, and let your partner come over on the diagonal and deal with the ball that has bounced. And, you know, we'll take it from there. We've had a whole show dedicated to that. But
there's a bit of a nugget in there that I'm not sure if we've ever discussed, which is, I think for the mine call, whether you're in the middle and you're in the middle of a firefight or you got a lob going over your head, I think as a team, you have to decide that mine call is law. Because if there's any confusion about it, I think if you guys agree that if someone calls mine, they are 99% sure that they can get to the ball and hit a shot, and that our teammates have to take that call as gospel and get out of the way and let you do your thing. I've absolutely played, certainly rec, where you've got two people calling mine, or someone calls mine and the other person hits the ball, or worse, and happened to a person in my club, gets their hand hit by a paddle, and now they've got a broken hand for 3 months. And that happened because the one partner said mine, and the other person ignored the mine and hit him anyway.
Yeah, so, and one way to avoid that potential conflict is not only getting better at calling mine or yours, but calling it earlier, calling it sooner.
Yeah.
Let's just commit to that and give your partner a chance to hear you and adjust their position accordingly.
Yeah, we're a little slower over the age of 50, you know, that those synapses are firing a little bit slower. So now what about if we are the lobbers strategically? Does that change at all for mixed versus gender?
It's not so much the gender, but if we have a smaller stature player on the other side, then that is a great opportunity to do some lobbing. We've got an overactive male player on the other side over whose head we can do some lobbing. I think lobbing in advanced mixed doubles is a really great play to do that. And another time, a little nugget that we've talked about before, because we're playing high-level mixed doubles, the other guys are going to be unwinding the stack pretty regularly. And I've mentioned before that a third shot lob when they're unwinding the stack or there's some confusion in the middle is a good time to lob down the middle. And, you know, we're looking to advance our court position accordingly. So lobbing, I think, is a great play all the time. And in mixed doubles, it's got a lot of application.
When we get into a dinking battle, and this is something I came across in one particular team, the male was so dominant and put so much pressure on us in the middle. Once we got into that second game, we discovered, oh, wait a second, we can go behind this guy. So that right side player's line, the right line of the court, on the other side, that left side player vacates that area and really becomes a presence in the middle. There's a lower backhand side that becomes a vulnerable spot because they're really committing to that middle. And to me, that's one of the more effective things we could actually drill as a team to attack that down the line shot for the right side player.
It's a very good play. The mistake that is made is going for too much on that shot behind the male player. We're dealing with a little bit of a higher net. I don't want to be flirting with that net. I want to hit a dink, a penetrating dink, visualizing the male player who's overactive in the middle, having to scramble back to hit a difficult backhand dink that we're hoping they're going to pop up. So let's visualize them hitting an off-balance dink, not necessarily going for a winner down the line. And a similar shot that we were remiss earlier in mentioning is the third shot drop location behind the male player. Frequently, they're clogging the middle. They're looking to cut off that third. So the mistake would be to constantly be targeting the female player for a third shot drop when behind the male player can be very effective. Again, whether it's a third or a dink.
Yeah, and it's a great spot for if the team is targeting your female partner on the right-hand side, it's a great spot for her to drop down the line to that right side, as long as she's cognizant of the potential of an Ernie. If the guy's a big dude that can Ernie those balls, it's definitely something to watch out for. But
let's like make him prove he can do that first.
Exactly. I love a very like new school third there, like a nice low mid-tempo drive or drop to make him do a lower behind him backhand. And that is something that's super effective. If you're there waiting for that pop-up as the dominant middle player, it's a fantastic way to go. I love that. What else? What other dinking strategies can you offer?
Well, the most common dinking pattern that we see in mixed doubles all the way up to the highest levels is females on the right-hand side exchanging forehand dinks. What you will see if you watch enough high-level doubles is they don't get stuck with that pattern. And they try to remember that the low backhand of the right side player, the female in this case, is a vulnerable shot for a lot of players. And it also teases the male player. We may give up a high middle ball to the male player by looking for the left foot of the right side player, but that's a good spot to go to so we don't get stuck in that angle dinking pattern that doesn't always get us anywhere.
And I will say, especially in this case, it is very easy to fall prey to that quote unquote gap in the middle. If that left side, in this case, male player is playing you a little more straight up, so they're leaving the middle where it looks kind of open, it's not open.
No.
You think it's open, it ain't open. They have a reach, they're waiting. In fact, you've talked about this before very specifically. You're like, I don't want my partner to take that ball. I want it to look open so you can pounce like a cobra and take that ball out of the middle and fire it right back at him, right?
Yeah, and that's the chess match that's going on. We just gave the advice of dinking behind the guy. Frequently, I'll bait that shot and we'll Ernie that shot, or at least I'll be sitting on a two-handed backhand making that look open. And at the same time, I'll make the middle look open and close that door down quite as well.
So I guess the elephant in the room, Scott, especially during these dinking battles, we've talked about where the guy's going to get 60% of the court, which seems low to me. If I'm being honest, I would think it'd be more 70-ish percent. How far should the guy go over towards the side, assuming a rhythmic dinking battle is taking place right now? Because I think when I watch you play, you're moving a lot between dinks. You're in the middle. You're towards the left. You're making them think about where they're going to hit that ball every single time, which kind of goes back to how out of breath I was as I was not even touching the ball, but kind of running around like an aerobics class. So how far do you go over to keep him thinking about those dinks?
Well, you mentioned earlier about checking egos. I'm not sure if you were thinking about the right side female player or otherwise, but I'm going to suggest that the male players, unless you're Ben Johns, and I don't know if Ben listens to the show, but he should, then we need to check our egos as well, because very few, if any of us, are playing on Sundays on PPA. There's some value in watching what they do. But when I mention, let's say that I play 60% of the balls, I'll bet you it's lower than that because my opponents on the other side are really good at finding the empty space to my right. And I'm going to threaten it. I'm going to come over. I'm going to provide pressure and stress for them. If they don't get the ball angled far enough over, I'm going to do something about it. But one of the reasons why I don't think I play more than 60% of the balls is my mixed partners are really good. They're really good. And in my case, there's not a whole lot of value in me coming over and taking a ball that bounces. So I think that's one of the key differences. If you watch open pro, high level mixed doubles, doubles, the male player comes over and plays the ball off the bounce somewhat regularly. In senior pro, they don't come over and take it off the bounce as much. We're not as fast. We're not going to be able to cover behind us as well. The only times that I'll do that is I've committed and I'm there and the ball happens to bounce. And then frequently I'm going to play a neutral ball that gets me back in position.
We had a question on our Instagram from Kelly Moore. And Kelly asked, when should you hit to the stronger player? I guess in this case, it would be the guy. But when should you hit to that person that is on that side of the court?
We addressed it a moment ago when we talked about dropping and dinking behind the stronger player. I think that's probably the best answer is they're mobile, they're squeezing the middle, they're leaving their sideline open, and we should all be exploiting that opening behind the stronger player. I'm not so sure if there's a great time to go directly at the stronger player, but behind the stronger player is a great play.
You've talked on the show a few times about when you played against Mattias Johansson, and he was just ripping ground strokes at your female partner. And then when you get into a firefight, he was firing shots at your female partner. So that is generally a somewhat accepted strategy, isn't it? Where that's the speed up, is the male to female straight ahead is the speed up.
It is, and it's a pattern that I enjoy exploiting as well. You know, looking for something soft, you know, to come back where they're not able to handle the pace as much. And a strategy we talked about in that Mattias match was if we're losing because the male player is impactfully speeding up at my female partner, we will reverse stack to get her diagonal from him, so that speed up can be less effective on their end.
Yes. And if your partner is involved, you're more apt to want them to speed up towards the woman as well. So it's female to female cross court. I mean, in general, we're basically speeding up towards the female of the mixed doubles team, whether it's you or your partner.
Yeah, the female to female cross court speed up is fine. We just have to remember that it's a short court that way, and they need to be targeting the inside shoulder so that the opponent doesn't let that ball go out because of the angle.
So this is one of those things for me, like as I listen to this, as we're recording it, if I'm a 4.0 plus female and I'm listening to this show, I'm thinking, all right, clearly I have to batten down the hatches, work on a stable base on my split step because I've got a lot of shots being fired my way that I'm going to have to handle, whether it's forehand or backhand, reset or counter. You got a lot of work to do on the court. And then as the male, I'm trying to impart my presence on the court as much as I can, but we're in a weird support role and also have to be so reactive where we've seen these cross-court speed-up battles happening, these firefights, bam, 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 and then all of a sudden we get a ball coming our way that we have to be ready for it. So it's weird. I think what makes mixed doubles so fun to watch is the firefights between the two. And sometimes it's heads up and sometimes it's cross court, but I think it's always interesting and very often more interesting than it is when you're just playing straight up gender doubles.
Mixed doubles is my favorite format to watch and to play, and hopefully we shared a few of those reasons why on this show.
Well, Scott, this is going to be a juicy episode, probably a 30-minute plus episode for us, which is a lot. And I think that, as you said, to me, this mixed doubles is such a blast. I feel very much like a rookie in the mixed doubles world. I'm still learning. It was super inspirational for me to watch you with Eva and some of the other senior pro women and really executing this at the highest level. I've seen you actually on the court with Anna Bright. I remember watching that. I think it was a PPA event or maybe APP, I'm not sure, but a couple years ago now. And was so, first of all, proud that you were there doing that with these open pros. That was amazing. But this idea, this is a whole new, I would say vertical, like we're in the business world, but it's a whole new thing to learn, I think, as a pickleball player, how to do this in a tournament setting. And it's really, really fun strategically to learn all this stuff. So thanks for sharing all that knowledge.
You bet. If there's one takeaway, hopefully you guys get from the show, is communicate in advance and during and after with all your partners, but especially your mixed partners.
For sure. Folks, you've now just listened to another episode of 4.0 to Pro. Thank you, as always, for listening. Please reach out on Instagram. Follow us. 4.0 to Pro. Follow Boulder Pickleball as well. If you are anywhere in Colorado, make sure you go see Scott for a lesson because he's the best in the biz. Talk to you guys next time.
Thank you for listening to 4.0 to Pro. For more tips, find us on Instagram at 4.0 to Pro.
If you have a pickleball question, submit it at picklehelp.com. Now, get out there and dominate. But don't forget to have fun.